couple weeks ago, we spent some time studying about our relationship to the Old Testament law, the laws that we find that were given in the Old Testament, whether before Moses or in the Ten Commands and in the instructions that God gave through Moses to the nation of Israel. And we were concerned about the question that many people sometimes have about, well, what about Old Testament teachings that were clearly commands of God, but we don't find them in the New Testament? Animal sacrifices, Levitical priesthood, the seventh-day Sabbath, etc. Various circumcision, various other Old Testament practices that were clearly part of God's instruction to His people in the Old Testament, but they're not in the New Testament. What should we do about those? Should we say we should practice them because they're in the Bible and God gave them as commandments, or should we say that we do not practice them because they're in the Old Testament law and we go by the New Testament law? We spent a good bit of time on that and noticed several different points in regard to it. The first was the fact that that old covenant was given, specifically even the Ten Commands, to the nation of Israel. They were never addressed or intended to be for people in general, for all people of all nations, but they were given to one particular nation. Secondly, it lasted throughout Israel's generations. Now, that might be a little bit difficult to understand, except what we did was we looked at a whole list of a dozen or ten or whatever it was, different practices that were in the Old Testament and were said to be throughout Israel's generations. And of the items in that list, we were able to identify almost every one of them are no longer to be practiced today because the New Testament says so, including circumcision and animal sacrifices and the Levitical priesthood and a number of other things that are clearly not to be practiced today, but also in the list was the seventh-day Sabbath. So if some of those things, they all must have lasted the same length of time throughout Israel's generations. If some of them have ended, then they must all have ended. And then none of them to be practiced today because they were all throughout Israel's generations. And so the conclusion that we reached was that when Jesus died on the cross, Israel's generations, that is, as God's special chosen people, had ended. He had no special purpose for that nation anymore. He fulfilled the promises that He'd given to them. And therefore, all those things that were said to be throughout Israel's generations, including the Sabbath, ended when Jesus died on the cross. Then we looked at a number of specific passages we have listed on the chart, and I'll spend some time on those again this evening as we enlarge on them. Each of them, in various ways, telling us that that old law has been removed. It's been taken away, Hebrews 7 said. It passed away, 2 Corinthians 3 said. We're no longer under that tutor, Galatians 3 said. Romans 7, we're delivered from the law. Ephesians 2, it was a wall of partition between Jew and Gentile. So in order to make peace between the two, Jesus had to remove it or break it down. Colossians 2, the ordinances were taken away and blotted out. Now what I want to do this evening is I want to look at some arguments, I don't know what argument is the proper word, some reasoning that you will have to deal with if you talk with somebody who believes that the Old Testament law, especially the Sabbath day, is still in effect today. You will meet people like this if you do much teaching, and they will tell you that we should not be worshiping God on the first day of the week. Seventh day of the week, the Sabbath is still in effect today, and we need to obey it. And if you talk with them, I assure you, they will have evidence to offer. They will have scriptures, and they will have responses to the material that we've talked about. Because this is one of their major doctrines. They wouldn't believe that kind of thing, so much different from so many other people who claim to be Christians, unless they had what they thought were good reasons. So I assure you they will have something to say about everything we've said so far, just about all of it. And so you will need to know if what they say is valid or not, and if it's not valid, how to respond to it. That's what I want to talk about tonight. I want to talk about some things that they will say to defend their view or to answer the evidence that we've talked about. Now, one of the first things that I want to talk about is Matthew chapter 5, verse 17 and 18. This is a passage that they will generally bring up to try to tell us that the Old Testament law is still in effect today, but I've listed it along with the other passages to show that it's really done away. The passage really shows not that it's in effect today, but it's been done away. So let's look at Matthew chapter 5, verse 17 and 18. Part of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, "Do not think that I came to destroy the law of the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For assuredly I say to you that till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled." All right. Now, what does this passage say? First of all, they will say, notice it says, Jesus didn't come to destroy the law of prophets. They say, if you think Jesus came to remove the law, that's a mistake. He said he didn't come to destroy it. And then they'll point out, it says, till heaven and earth pass away. Not one jot or tittle will pass away. Heaven and earth hasn't passed away, so therefore the law hasn't passed away. That's the approach they'll use in the passage. And at first it may sound like a pretty good reason, a pretty good argument. But look at the passage more closely. Look at verse 18. Jesus said, till heaven and earth shall pass away, one jot or one tittle will not, no means pass away till all is fulfilled. He's saying none of it would pass away till it was fulfilled. If people are saying that this means that the law is going to remain, it's still in effect today, and it's going to remain until heaven and earth pass away, then it's all in effect. Not even one jot or tittle has ceased. In fact, verse 17 says, the law and the prophets. It's all in effect. And in verse 19, if you go on, he says, even the least of these commandments. So every command in the Old Testament is still in effect. The animal sacrifices would still be in effect. The Levitical priesthood would still be in effect. Circumcision, the holy days, it's all still in effect. Not even one jot or tittle, not even the least command, has been removed. If the passage is saying that it's still in effect, but we've already shown by passage after passage that that's not so. All those things have been removed. Circumcision and the animal sacrifice and so on, they're not in effect. So there's something wrong with that. There must be a better explanation. If in fact we agree that even one jot or tittle of the Old Testament law is no longer in effect, then the truth of it, none of it's in effect. Because not one jot or tittle would by any means pass from the law till all was fulfilled. If any of it's passed, then it must be that all has been fulfilled. And that's a key to the passage. But I also want to point out, they say, well, it says till heaven and earth pass away. Well, what does that mean? Look in the parallel in Luke 16, 17. I'm not going to take the time to read it, but if you look up Luke 16 and 17, the parallel passage says, till heaven and earth pass away, it says it is easier for heaven and earth to pass away. Oh. So if that's what that expression means, let's read it that way. It is easier for heaven and earth to pass away than for one jot or one tittle of the law to pass away till all is fulfilled. So what Jesus is saying is the law cannot pass away any more than heaven and earth can pass away till all is fulfilled. But he just said in verse 17, he didn't come to destroy it, but to fulfill it. So not even one jot or tittle would pass away till all was fulfilled, but he came to fulfill it. Well, what that means then is that it would pass away from as a result of his first coming. So what did Jesus mean when he said he did not come to destroy it? Well, he's contrasting that to fulfilling it. A contract, agreement, covenant, can be rendered void in one of two ways. Legally or illegally. By destroying it or by fulfilling it. Those are two different things. Jesus said, I didn't come to destroy it, that is to remove it contrary to its provisions. I came to fulfill it. Which would remove it. It would pass away in harmony with its provisions. Let me illustrate that. Suppose you hire Harlan to design a house for you or some other building. You have a contract. Harlan's to design the building, and you're to pay him so much money. And that's the agreement. Now, the contract could cease to be binding in one of two ways. You could destroy it. You could tear it up. That would be illegal, but you could do it. Okay? Jesus is saying, I didn't come to do that with the Old Testament. I didn't come to remove it in violation of it or contrary to it. But there's another way that that contract you had with Harlan could cease to be binding, and that is, you could both fulfill it. Hardin could design the building, and you could pay him. Now the contract has been fulfilled. After it's fulfilled, it ceases to be binding. You can't go back to Hardin and say, oh, you've got to design another building for me. Here's the contract that says what I didn't know. He did that. He can't come to you and say, oh, you've got to pay me. It's right here in the contract. No, you did that. You see, it's been fulfilled. It's no longer in effect because it's been fulfilled. Not because it was destroyed, but because it was fulfilled. That's what Jesus is saying in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 17. He didn't come to destroy it, that is to in some way remove it contrary to its provisions. He came to fulfill it. But when he fulfilled it, then it would pass away. It would cease to be binding because it's accomplished its purpose. So the Old Testament laws, that passage then, do I need to do this? Okay. Covenant can end illegally or legally. Once fulfilled, it's no longer binding. So, better go back. Let me go back. Back. There you go. All right. So what we've learned then is that basically, for two reasons, the law of Moses is no longer in effect. First, because it never, for everybody, for people in general, it's not in effect. First of all, it never was intended for people in general. It was just for one nation. And secondly, it fulfilled its purpose even for that nation, and the Lord removed it. Now, what that means then is, and excuse me, I'm going to have to skip through some things in a minute. What that means then is that none of the Old Testament law would be in effect today. Not animal sacrifices, not the Sabbath, not instrumental music, not the Ten Commandments. None of it would be in effect unless there's something we're missing. And of course, the folks that you talk to are going to say, yep, there's something you're missing. What they're going to say is, and I assure you, if you ever study with these folks, if you've studied with them, you know what I'm saying. So if you haven't studied with them, I guarantee you it's going to happen. They will say, no, all of these passages are talking about a part of the Old Testament law. They're saying that some of the Old Testament law has been removed, but not all of it. I guarantee you that's the approach that they're going to use. So let's deal with that. Excuse me while I skip through this again. They're going to tell you that some parts of the law are still in effect. So let's look at some of the ways that they try to do that. They will try to distinguish between the law of God and the law of Moses. They say the law of God, they'll say that's the Ten Commandments. The law of Moses, that's the other parts of the things that God revealed. Or they will say there's the moral law, which again includes the Ten Commandments, and then there's the ceremonial law. They'll say the part that was removed was the law of Moses, the ceremonial law. All those passages that we talked about, they'll say, yeah, we agree with all those passages, but that's talking about the ceremonial law. That's talking about animal sacrifices and the Levitical priesthood and circumcision. That's talking about those ceremonial things. Those things were removed, but the law of God, the moral law, the Ten Commandments, including the Sabbath, which was one of the Ten Commandments, those are all still in effect today. God didn't remove those. So what's the truth of it? How do we respond to that? Is that right or not? Well, the first point I would point out is, how do we know that? It's one thing to make a statement like that. It's another thing to prove it. We've shown scriptures that say that the first covenant was removed and so forth. How do we know? What reason is there to believe that that's just part of it? That's not the whole thing, and that some of it's still in effect. What scripture in particular tells us what laws are in effect and which are not? How do we know? Do we just pick and choose? If we're going to say, well, part of it's removed and part's not removed, how do we know what's gone? How do you go to the Bible and from the Word of God know what parts are still in effect and what parts are not in effect? How do you prove it by the Bible? These terms, moral law and ceremonial law, for example, aren't even in the Bible. So how do they know that the ceremonial law was removed and the moral law still in effect? In particular, the Sabbath law, they say, well, the Sabbath law, that's part of the moral law, that's part of the Ten Commandments, so it's still in effect. But, it's true the Sabbath was in the Ten Commandments, but the Sabbath is also in other parts of the Old Testament, which we would clearly consider ceremonial. For example, in Leviticus 23, verses 1 through 44, it's listed right along with the other feast days. which we've already demonstrated and which they would generally agree on, not in effect today. The Passover and the Feast of Tabernacles and so on, and the Sabbath day. So, they say, well, it's in the Ten Commandments, so it's still in effect, but it's also in the ceremonial law in the part they say was removed. So how do we know if it's removed or still in effect? You see, there's a problem with the approach. And then, the folks who make the argument, while they will say, okay, animal sacrifices, circumcision, and so on and so on, they will take other parts of the law, such as tithing, instrumental music, and in some cases, even the dietary laws. And they'll say, those things are still in effect. Well, that's not the Ten Commandments. And there's nothing particularly moral about that, in contrast to ceremonial. So how did they come to the decision that the Sabbath and the tithing and the instrumental music, and that's still in effect, but the rest of it's gone? How do they make those decisions? You see, they're really not consistent, even with their own rule. They violate their own rule. It's either, if the law of God is the Ten Commandments and the rest of it is ceremonial law of Moses and so on, then they shouldn't be keeping any of the rest of that. And they still have problems proving that the Sabbath belongs in the part that's still here today. The truth is, that the law of Moses and the law of God are just different terms for the same thing. There isn't a distinction between the two, and we can show it by the Bible. Look in Nehemiah chapter 8. They need to prove that there's a difference. Not only can they not prove it, we can prove it's not so. Look in Nehemiah chapter 8, and we'll look at a couple of passages. Nehemiah chapter 8. The people are restoring Jerusalem, the walls, and they call a meeting of the people to read from God's law. Nehemiah 8 verse 1. All the people gathered together as one man in the water gate, the open square that was in front of the water gate, and they told Ezra to bring the book of the law of Moses, which the Lord had commanded Israel. So what is it? What's he going to read? He's going to read the book of the law of Moses. So he starts reading. You go on down through the chapter. As the reading comes down to verse 8. So they read distinctly from the book in the law of God. And they gave the sense and helped them to understand the reading. What was it? Verse 1 said they were reading the book of the law of Moses. Verse 8 says they're reading the law of God, the book of the law of God. So you see, there is no distinction between the law of Moses and the law of God. It's the same thing. It's not different at all. And then down in verse 14, and by the way, verse 18 also calls it the law of God. But then verse 14 says, and they found written in the law which the Lord had commanded by Moses, that the children of Israel should dwell in booths, and so on. So here's the explanation. It's the law of God because God originated it. It's the law of Moses because Moses revealed it. But it's not two different laws. It's just two different terms for the same system, the same law that God revealed. Look at Luke chapter 2, and we'll see it again in another passage. Here's when Jesus has been born, and they're bringing him to the temple for the ceremonial rites that were to be undergone when a baby was born. Leviticus chapter 2, and by the way, this is going to involve animal sacrifices, which would be ceremonial according to their definition. Luke chapter 2, and we'll start in verse 21. When 8 days were completed for the circumcision of the child, his name was called Jesus, the name given by an angel before he was conceived in the womb. And when the days of her purification according to the law of Moses were completed, that brought him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord, as it is written in the law of the Lord. Every male who opens the womb shall be called holy to the Lord, and to offer a sacrifice according to what is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. So, verse 22 said they were offering these sacrifices and so on according to the law of Moses, but verse 23 and 24 called it according to the law of the Lord. So the law of the Lord and the law of Moses are not two different laws. They're the same law. And in this context, it's animal sacrifices, which they would consider to be ceremonial and have been done away. And yet the passage says it's law of the Lord, which contradicts, again, what they would say. Verse 39 makes the same point. So when they had performed all things according to the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee to their own city, Nazareth. So this distinction that they try to make between the law of Moses and the law of the Lord is simply not valid. It's just two different terms for the same law. The whole Old Testament system is the law of God, the law of the Lord. And then in 2 Chronicles 31, verses 2 through 4, the law of God is mentioned, and it described in the context, it includes animal sacrifices, new moon, and feast days. Now, according to those who say that we're still under the law of God and the Sabbath law, that shouldn't be law of God. That should be ceremonial because it's been done away. It's animal sacrifices, new moon and feast day and so on. But the Bible itself calls it the law of God. So the point is, the distinction that they try to make so that they can keep part of the law and remove the rest of it is simply not valid. They can't prove it, and even more, basically the Bible itself shows that it's not true. So the Bible does not make that distinction. So that's that effort that they make to try to keep part of the law and let the rest of it go isn't valid. Let's try to consider another one now. They've got other approaches that they use. They will say, well, the Sabbath law was in effect from creation. They will tell you. Before the law, before Moses ever gave his law, so it must still be in effect today because it wasn't really given, they say, at Sinai. It goes all the way back to creation. And so laws, so the distinction that they're trying to make here is laws given before Sinai. The ones that were removed were the ones given at Sinai. But if it was given before Sinai, then it's still in effect. That's what they want to try to say. But again, that doesn't work. Because here's some laws that were in effect before Mount Sinai, before Moses gave the laws at Sinai, that we know that they ended the cross. Animal sacrifices were in effect before Moses. Remember Cain and Abel? And we just read about Noah. Genesis 8, offering the animal sacrifices. And Abraham and so on. All that was in effect. The animal sacrifices. So if the things that were in effect before the before Moses and at Mount Sinai, if that means they're still in effect today, then there should still be animal sacrifice. Circumcision was in effect before, long before Mount Sinai. God gave that to Abraham in Genesis chapter 17. The distinction between clean and unclean animals, we saw that with regard to Noah. That was apparently revealed also before Moses and at Mount Sinai. The Passover was in Exodus chapter 12. Before they left Egypt, let alone came to Mount Sinai. So here's a whole series, and maybe there are others we could think of, that were given before Mount Sinai, before Moses gave the laws at Mount Sinai, that we know are still not in effect today. So the fact that something was taught by God or bound upon certain people before Mount Sinai doesn't prove that it's still in effect today. All those laws were removed. The question, the point that it was given before to somebody before Mount Sinai doesn't prove that it's still in effect today. However, is it really true? Look at Genesis chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. Is it really true that God gave people the Sabbath from creation? That is, from creation he expected people to follow that rule of keeping the Sabbath. Look at Genesis chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. It says, on the seventh day, God ended his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work, which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work, which God had created and made. Now the passage says that God blessed the day and sanctified it, but who was resting on that day? Does it say that he told the people to rest beginning then? Doesn't say that, does it? He's the one who rested on that day. You've got to remember now that it refers to the fact that God sanctified it, but when did God sanctify it? And who did he tell, when did he tell men that they were supposed to keep that law? You've got to remember, this was written by Moses. This wasn't written by Adam or by Abraham or Noah or any Old Testament character. This was written before Moses. This was written by Moses, the man who by God revealed the Sabbath to the nation of Israel in the Ten Commands. Moses wrote this and refers to the fact that God blessed the day and sanctified it, but it doesn't say when the people were told to keep it. But when Moses wrote this, the people knew they were supposed to keep it because he'd given them that law. Moses gave them that law. But it doesn't say that anybody was expected to keep it before Moses. There is no evidence, no mention of Abraham keeping it, or Noah, or Jacob, or any of those old Testament, even Adam. There's no mention that they kept the Sabbath. Now, if they were keeping it, why does it say something about that? But if you look at Exodus, Ezekiel rather, chapter 20, in verses 10 through 12, you'll find where the New Testament, the Bible rather, tells us when and to whom God told to keep the Sabbath. Ezekiel chapter 20, verses 10 through 12. Ezekiel 20, verses 10 through 12. God says, therefore I made them go out of the land of Egypt and brought them into the wilderness, and I gave them my statutes and showed them my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live by them. Moreover, I also gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between them and me, that they may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies them. Yet the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness, etc. Goes on and talks about who he was talking about. Who is it that in verse 13 defiled his Sabbath and so on? Who is it that he brought out of Egypt, verse 10? Who is it that he gave these laws and judgments, including the Sabbath, as a sign between him and them? It's Israel. We've already seen that. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 15, we went through a number of passages that showed that was the nation of Israel that God brought out of Egypt. That's the people that he gave to the Sabbath. So, while it's true God himself did not work on the seventh day after the 6 days of creation, and while it's true that it's because of that, or that's one reason why God told the nation of Israel that they were not to work on the seventh day, that instruction was not given, as far as the scriptures say, until Moses led the people out from the land of Egypt. And it was a sign, and we talked about this last time too, there was a sign between God and Israel. How could it be a sign between God and Israel if everybody in the whole world throughout the history of the world is supposed to keep it? Where's the sign between him and Israel? So Genesis 2 and verse 3 says that God rested on that day, and that's why at Moses, by the direction of God, taught the people of Israel to do it. But it doesn't say when the law was revealed to the people to do, or who it was upon, until you get to passages like Ezekiel 20 and Genesis 5, Deuteronomy 5, and so forth, and then you find out it was given to the nation of Israel through Moses, after God had brought them out of the land of Egypt. By the way, if you want to read Matthew 10 and verse 4, you have another example of that kind of thing, where a person reads, makes a statement, a writer makes a statement about something that it sounds like it happened then, but really it happened afterwards, but the writer speaks of it because he knows when he writes it's already happened. What it's talking about is that Judas betrayed Jesus. Read it if you want, and you see a parallel to Genesis chapter 2 and verse 3. But let's move on. There's another effort that they will make. They will say, well, if you look at Exodus chapter 31, verse 16 and 17, the Bible says that the Sabbath law was perpetual, everlasting, forever, depending on your translation. Ezekiel 31, 16 and 17. Therefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made heavens and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. Now, in the first place, notice that confirms what we just said, that it was the nation of Israel that God gave that instruction. Though he rested on the seventh day, it was them that he gave it to, and it was a sign between him and them. But the point that they're making, that they want to talk about here, is the forever and the perpetual. And they say, if it's forever, then it must still be in effect today. Well, in the first place, I want to point out that, again, the passage says it was a sign between God and the nation of Israel. There's still no basis for saying that everybody ought to keep it, that those of us who are not descendants of Israel should keep it. How do they take a passage that says it was a sign between God and the nation of Israel and conclude that it's for everybody? That part still doesn't change. But in the second place, I'd like to point out that if it's still in effect today, then it must be kept the way the law reads. Not one jot or tittle was to be taken away. And if you read the context, you'll see that what it says is that those who didn't obey it were to be killed. Anybody who worked on the Sabbath day was supposed to be put to death. If the law is still in effect, then that's the law, right? So it still has to be practiced the way the passage says. They would have to kill people who don't practice, or at least Israelites who don't practice the seventh-day Sabbath, to fail to keep the law the way the law was given is to admit that it's not in effect. Apparently one jot or tittle has passed away if they're not going to keep it the way the law said that it should. But the truth is, and this is difficult, and I understand that, and it took me a while to wrestle with this, that word forever or perpetual or everlasting, depending on what your translation, is like lots of other Bible words. The only way to understand what it means is to see how the Bible uses it. You've got to know how the Bible uses words to apply them properly. An example is that word hate that we've talked about from time to time. In Luke chapter 14, I think Andy talked about this not long ago, that God said that you cannot be his disciple unless you hate your father and mother. But when you read what the Bible says about father and mother, you understand that doesn't mean that you want to hurt your parents, that you hope horrible things will happen to them. It's not hatred in that sense. It's that you have less love for them than you do for the Lord. You've got to understand Bible words the way the Bible uses them. And the same thing is true of this word forever. So here's some examples of other things. And I've listed the passages there. I'm not going to take time to read them. But if you want to write them down, there they are. All of those things there, read the passages, were forever, everlasting, or perpetual. Passover, incense, the other feast days, the animal sacrifice, the Levitical priests, the tabernacle worship, circumcision, and in fact all God's commands that God gave through Moses, they're all said to be perpetual, everlasting, forever, and so forth. But we already know they've been removed. They're not in effect today. Circumcision, animal sacrifices, the feast days, Passover. We've already shown many New Testament scriptures that show that they're not in effect anymore. So forever in these passages does not mean what it sounds like, that it's never going to end. And so if you look up at that word forever or whatever, you'll find that what it really means is that it's lasting for an indefinite period of time. Or age lasting, or throughout your generations. And that's what Exodus chapter 31 said. When we read it, it said, it shall be a perpetual covenant throughout their generations. He defines in the context what he means by perpetual. As long as Israel's special generations lasted, but we've already shown that they've ended. All of those things that were said to be throughout their generations have ended. They ended when Jesus died on the cross. And so what sounds like a difficult point is really not saying what they think it means when you understand and look at the way the word is used in those passages. And I encourage you to look it up and see whether or not that's true. So those are some efforts that they make to try to defend choosing certain Old Testament things, especially the Sabbath, and saying they're still in effect today, but other things were removed. The truth is, though, that all the passages that we studied last time showing that the Old Testament has been removed, if you study all of them in their context, every one of them show that the whole Old Testament law has been removed. Let's go through them again. Every one of them that we talked about, we'll go through them again. And we're going to show how that they said the law would be removed. Then we're going to show what they're talking about. So let's go through them. Hebrews chapter 7. Here's the part we talked about last time. Hebrews chapter 7 through 10. That the law was changed. It was annulled. It was made old and vanished away. Jesus took it away and established a new covenant. The top part, that's what we talked about last time. But what law is it talking about? What is that covenant that Jesus removed and so forth? Well, in the first place I point out to you, it was one covenant. It wasn't two or three or whatever covenants. It wasn't the law of God and the law of Moses, two different laws. It wasn't the moral law and the ceremonial law, separate covenants. It was one covenant, the first covenant, in contrast to the second covenant, which is the New Testament, that Jesus replaced it with. So that whole covenant, whatever that was, that whole covenant was removed when Jesus died on the cross. It was one covenant in contrast. Well, what is that covenant? Well, look with me in Hebrews chapter 9, and it'll tell us. The context will tell us what covenant he's talking about. Hebrews chapter 9, let's look at verse 18 to 20. Excuse me. Hebrews chapter 9, verse 18 to 20. Therefore, therefore, not even the first covenant was dedicated without blood. So it was a covenant, the first covenant. It was not dedicated without blood. That means it was dedicated with blood. For when Moses had spoken, listen, every precept to all the people according to the law, he took the blood of calves and goats with water, scarlet wool, and hyssop, and sprinkled both the book itself and all the people, saying, this is the blood of the covenant which God has commanded you. All right? What does that covenant include? The passage says, every precept that Moses gave. Every precept. That's what was included in that which was spoken by Moses. And that's the first covenant that all these passages are saying was changed or disannulled or done away. Every precept. Now, in fact, he quotes then, or refers to, in fact, quotes in verse 20, the blood of the covenant that God has commanded you. Go back to Exodus 24, verses 3 through 8. We're not going to take the time, but go back to Exodus 24, verses 3 through 8, and you will read where that happened, where Moses dedicated the book and the law and the people and so on with the blood. And you'll see again and again and again in that context, it says that it's talking about all the words that the Lord spoke. Verse 3 says it, verse 4 and 7, they all say all the commands that the Lord spoke, including the Ten Commands that were given previously in chapter 20. So that first covenant that God said Jesus took away and gave us the new covenant, that first covenant included everything that Moses taught. The whole thing, including the Ten Commands. But if that's not conclusive for you, look at chapter 9 of Hebrews. And he's going to identify some things that were in that first covenant. Hebrews chapter 9, verses 1 through 4. He's going to get specific. Then indeed, even the first covenant had ordinances of divine service and the earthly sanctuary. Here's the first covenant. He's going to talk about it. What are some things involved in that first covenant? For a tabernacle was prepared, the first part in which was the lampstand, the table. The show of bread was called the sanctuary. Behind the second veil, the part of the tabernacle which is called the holiest of all. All this is part of that covenant. You see? Which had the golden altar of incense, the ark of the covenant overlaid on all sides with gold, in which were the golden pot that had the manna, Aaron's rod that budded, and the tablets of the covenant. The first covenant, that one that Jesus took away and replaced with the new covenant, that first covenant included all these ordinances, including the tablets of the covenant. What's the tablets of the covenant? Well, if you know anything about the Old Testament, and these folks that you talk with, well, they'll know, the tablets of the covenant, that's the Ten Commands, written on the two tables of stone in the Ark of the Covenant. So the first covenant that the context says again and again was removed in a way includes the tables of the covenant. That's the Ten Commands. And one of those commands was the Sabbath. So the passage that we've already studied here shows not only that the law was removed, but the whole thing was removed. And by the way, there's some passages in Exodus 34, I'll give them to you in just a moment, that show that the tablets of the covenant were the Ten Commands. So we don't need to pick and choose. We don't have any right to say parts of the law are still in effect and parts are gone. The passage itself that shows that the covenant was removed shows us that was the whole thing, including the Ten Commands. Well, the second passage that we looked at was 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 6 through 11. And in reading that passage, I'm not going to read it all over again, but in reading it again, it said that what was written on stones was glorious, but what was glorious has passed away, in contrast to the new covenant, which has the greater glory. What was written on the stones was glorious, but it passed away. What was written on the stones? Well, here's the passage that I mentioned before. What was written on the stones? The Ten Commandments. What was written on the stones was glorious, and what was glorious was passed away. So the Ten Commands, which were written on the stones, is what passed away. The Ten Commands passed away. So again, look at the context, and it will tell you. It will show you that it's talking about the whole law, including the Ten Commands, which the Sabbath was one of them, you see. And in the context of 2 Corinthians chapter 3, it talks about how that when Moses delivered that law, his face shone, that was part of the glory. Read the story, Exodus 34, verse 27 through 35, and it shows that his face shone when he gave the Ten Commandments. So the giving of the Ten Commandments is when his face shone, That's the covenant that he's talking about that was written on tape, the tablets of stone, and that's what was removed, according to 2 Corinthians, and passed away, according to 2 Corinthians chapter 3. So you see, if you just read the context of these passages, it will show that what's being talked about as being removed includes the whole Old Testament, including the Ten Commands and or the Sabbath. Well, let's keep going. We looked at Galatians chapters 3 through 5. Go and look there for a few moments too. We looked at the passages showing here that the old law was a schoolmaster to bring us to Christ. Galatians 3, verse 24, a tutor to bring us to Christ, verse 24 and 25. But now that faith has come, now that Christ has come and the gospel, we're no longer under the tutor. The law was the tutor to bring us to Christ. We're no longer under the tutor since Christ came. Okay? But now, what is that law that was the tutor? The passage said it was a yoke of bondage, and it says if we try to go back and follow it, we're falling from grace. Christ profits us nothing. We're not under it. But what was that law? Let the context define it. Let's look. Look at chapter 3 of Galatians, verse 17. Galatians chapter 3, verse 17. This I say, that the law, I'm always talking about now in the context, the law which was that was 430 years later cannot annul the covenant that was confirmed before by God in Christ, that it should make the promise of no effect. Now the point he's talking about here is God made a promise to Abraham. And your seed, all nations, you'll be blessed. And seed will become a great nation, receive the land of Canaan. That was the promise. The law was given 430 years later. The law that the context is saying would bring us to Christ, but now we're not under that law. What law was given 430 years after the promise to Abraham? It was the law at Mount Sinai, including the Ten Commands. That's the law that God gave 430 years after the promises that he made to Abraham. And that's not all. Chapter 3, verse 10 says he's talking about all things that are written in the book of the law. But we just showed, and if you go back to Hebrews chapter 9 and in Exodus chapter 24, that the things that were written in the book of the law, that was included the Ten Commands in chapter 20. So it's all things that are written in the law. That's the law that he talked about, the whole thing. And to clinch it then, chapter 5 and verse 3, chapter 5 and verse 3, Paul says, I testify again to every man who becomes circumcised that he's a debtor to keep the whole law. You see that? The book of Galatians tells you what law is about. It's a whole. It's not parts where you can take part and leave part. The law was a whole. And basically saying take it or leave it. And if you take it, then you're fallen from grace. Christ profits you nothing, etc. So if you're going to keep any part of that law, he uses circumcision because that was one of the signs that was so important to the Jews, but the same thing would apply to the Sabbath or any other part of the law. If you take a part of it and say, I've got to keep that, then you've got to keep the whole thing. And if you do, you're fallen from grace, etc. So here again, the covenant that Jesus took away included the whole law given by Moses and at Mount Sinai, including then the Ten Commandments and the Sabbath. Odd again. Romans chapter 7. This passage, I want to turn to that one. This passage was one that talked about the woman is bound by law to her husband as long as he lives. She marries another man while her husband's alive. She's an adulteress, and so on. And compare that then to the law, that we are delivered from the law, just like that woman is delivered from her husband. When he's dead, she's no longer bound to him. She's no longer subject to him. We've been delivered from the law. The passage says, now that we can be married to Christ. What law is he talking about there? What is that law that we're delivered from? Well, that was the first six verses, but we didn't read verse 7. Let's read verse 7. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? Certainly not. On the contrary, I would not have known sin except through the law, for I would not have known covetousness unless the law had said, you shall not covet. Now, what law says you shall not covet? The Ten Commandments. That's one of the Ten Commandments. So the law that he's talking about here, that he said we are delivered from, like the woman whose husband is dead, and can be married to another man, the law that he's talking about that we're delivered from is the law that says you shall not covet. That's the Ten Commands. And of course, the Sabbath was another one of the Ten Commands. So we're delivered from the whole Old Testament law, including the Ten Commands. And in fact, what the passage is telling us then is to try to keep both the Old Testament and the New Testament would be like, in his illustration, would be like a woman who's bound to one man and marries another man. It would be adultery. She's bound to one man and marries another man, that's adultery. If we try to keep the Old Testament law and be married to Christ with the New Testament law also, that's spiritual adultery. So the clear conclusion of the passage is that we're not under the law at all. No part, not the Ten Commandments, no part of the Old Testament law as such is in effect on us today. Well, again, the next passage we looked at was Ephesians chapter 2, verses 11 through 18 through 16 and so forth. And the point of that passage, remember, was that the law was a barrier, a wall of partition between Jew and Gentile. And we made the point that the reason that was true is because God gave the law to the nation of Israel, only to them and not to other nations. So the fact that they had that law and other nations didn't have it became a barrier between them and other nations. So in Jesus, in order to make peace, had to break down the middle wall of partition. He removed the law of commandments containing ordinances. The Old Testament law had to be removed because it was only given to one nation. For Jew and Gentile all to be subject to Christ under the gospel, he had to remove that law. But what law would have been that barrier between Jew and Gentile? Well, it had to include the Ten Commandments because we showed last time that God gave that to the Jews, the nation of Israel. It wasn't given to the Gentiles. So just like circumcision and any other of those laws that God gave, especially to the nation of Israel, that all had to be removed in order for the Lord to make peace between Jew and Gentile. And if we're going to go back and bind the Old Testament law today, then we're rebuilding that wall. We're putting back the wall that Jesus died to remove. So again, the Ten Commandments, the Sabbath, which God was a sign between God and Israel. If we go back and say, we'll bind the Sabbath. That was a sign between God and Israel. That rebuilds that wall, you see, that Jesus died to remove. We looked at Colossians chapter 2. I'm going to spend some time on this one. Let's look at Colossians chapter 2. We pointed out how that in verse 14, that Jesus wiped out the handwriting and requirements that was contrary to us. And therefore, in verse 16, he says that no one should judge us in regard to these various Old Testament laws. Now, since that law is removed, the passage says, no man should judge in regard to meat and drink, holy days, new moons, or the Sabbaths. There's a passage that expressly tells us the Sabbath is not in effect anymore. Don't let anybody judge you in regard to the Sabbath because the law of commandments contained in ordinance was removed. Jesus nailed it to his cross. Now we have a passage that expressly names the Sabbath and says that it's not in effect. It was a shadow of things to come, verse 17 says, and so forth. But I guarantee you, again, you talk to folks who believe the Sabbath is still today, they've got an answer for this one. And here's what they're going to say. They're going to say, see that word Sabbath is plural? New moon or Sabbaths, plural? They'll say, that's not talking about the seventh-day Sabbath. It's plural. They'll say, that's talking about there were various rest days. The word Sabbath means rest. There were various rest days associated with various Old Testament holy days. And those Sabbaths, that's what it's talking about here. Those other Sabbaths, not the seventh-day Sabbath, the other Sabbaths. That's the ones, because it's plural, they will say. See? So it's not talking about the seventh day. Well, let's look at that for a moment. The truth is, Sabbath, the word Sabbath, in the original text, is plural in lots of passages where everybody knows it's talking about the seventh-day Sabbath. And they'll agree it's talking about the seventh-day Sabbath. Here's just a few of them. One of them is Exodus chapter 31, the passage that we just read a few moments ago, where they say that it's perpetual and forever, and so it's still in effect. The word for Sabbath there is plural right there. Well, they clearly acknowledge it's talking about the seventh-day Sabbath. If it's plural there, well, then why argue that in Colossians chapter 2? Because it's plural, it can't be the seventh-day Sabbath. Luke chapter 4, verse 16. Acts chapter 13 and verse 14. Acts 16 and verse 13. All these passages are talking about various people in the synagogues on the Sabbath day. But Sabbath is plural. They know that's the seventh-day Sabbath. It clearly is the seventh-day Sabbath, but it's plural. Just like in Colossians chapter 2. In Matthew 12 and Luke chapter 13, you have, read those contexts, you'll have the plural form of the word Sabbath and the singular word in the very same context used interchangeably, all of them referring to the seventh-day Sabbath. Sometimes it's plural, sometimes it's singular. So this distinction that they're trying to make, because it's plural, it can't be the seventh-day Sabbath, simply isn't so. There's all kinds of passages where it's used plural, clearly referring to the seventh-day Sabbath, including in the Septuagint, which is a Greek translation from the Hebrew into Greek, in the Ten Commands. In Exodus 20, verse 8, and Deuteronomy 5, verse 12, in the Ten Commands, it's plural. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, it's plural. Just as surely as Colossians chapter 2. The truth is that the word for Sabbath is used in the New Testament 59 times, and there isn't any place where there's evidence that it does not include the seventh-day Sabbath. And if you talk with a person who tries to believe that the Sabbath is for a day, every one of those passages, they'll take it to include the seventh day, except one passage. Every other passage in the New Testament, where the word Sabbath, plural or singular, is used to refer to the Sabbath, they'll say it's the seventh day, except one. Colossians 2 and verse 16. The one that says, don't let anybody judge you in regard to it, because the Lord nailed it to the cross. All the rest of them, they acknowledge, means the seventh day. The truth is, there's a reason why the word Sabbath is plural in Colossians chapter 2. And the way to understand it is to go back and look at lots of other Old Testament passages, and here's a number of them, that use the same formula that's in Colossians chapter 2. I call it the formula. It's a set way of describing the Jewish holy days. There were annual holy days, monthly holy day, and the weekly holy day. The feasts, the annual feasts, the new moons, and the Sabbaths. And here's a number of passages that use those terms very similar to Colossians chapter 2 that show that the point is they're talking about the annual, the monthly, and the weekly holy days. 1 Chronicles 23, I'm not going to take time to read them. 1 Chronicles 23, verse 21, the Sabbaths, the new moons, the set feasts. Weekly, monthly, annual. 2 Chronicles 2, verse 4, Sabbaths, new moons, feasts. 2 Chronicles 8, 13, Sabbaths, new moons, feasts. 2 Chronicles 31, 3, Sabbaths, new moons, feasts. And then Nehemiah 10:33, Sabbaths, new moons, feasts, set feasts, and they've got the other way around. Ezekiel 45:17, feasts, new moons, Sabbaths. Hosea 2:11, feasts, feast days, new moons, Sabbaths. And Colossians 2:16, holy days, new moon, Sabbaths. You see? There's a reason why Paul used that expression in Colossians chapter 2. That's the way that God and the Old Testament writers again and again identified annual, monthly, and weekly holy days. When you see that, Sabbaths in Colossians chapter 2, verse 16 can only mean one thing. The weekly holy day, the seventh day of the week. Paul expressly stated it that way so that we would know that he's talking about, I'm not just saying that the holy days of the Old Testament are removed. I'm saying that the laws of the meats are removed, and I'm saying the holy days, the annual, monthly, and weekly. It's all removed. Paul expressly says it in such a way so that we would understand that's the point. And of course, if we understand the Sabbath is removed, then we understand the whole Ten Commands are removed because the Sabbath was one of the Ten Commands. And then finally, Matthew chapter 5, which we began with this evening, verse 17 and 18, Jesus said he fulfilled the law so that it would pass away. And he's saying that's talking about the law and the prophets. Every jot and tittle. Every jot and tittle. For he said, not one jot or tittle will pass till all is fulfilled. And he came to fulfill it. So what's he saying that was removed or passed away when he fulfilled it? Every jot and tittle. Every part of the law was removed when Jesus died on the cross. That answers then the question, for it should, I hope, for you and me, of our relationship to the law. The Old Testament is not God's instructions or commandments for how we ought to live today. Jesus replaced it with the New Testament, the gospel. That's the system that we're under today. And that leaves, of course, then the other question. People say, well, if we're not under the Ten Commandments, it's okay to murder. It's okay to steal. It's okay to commit adultery. That's the Ten Commandments. If we're not under the Ten Commandments, it's okay to do those things. That's one question that we want to look at in a future lesson.